Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do the most innovative companies and work teams harness the strengths of their members to understand the needs of the market and develop and execute groundbreaking ideas? In his career as general manager of the design firm IDEO, Tom Kelly has participated in all facets of the creative process and learned the best ways to empower his employees to do their best work, which he writes about in his influential book, The 10 Faces of Innovation, IDEO's Strategies for Beating the Devil's Advocate and Driving Creativity Throughout Your Organization. He's in town to speak tonight at 7 at the Lamplighter School in Dallas. You can find ticket information online at thelamplighterschool.org. Tom Kelly, welcome to Think.
Thanks.
You know, so many times I think we tend to think of innovation, well, that's for the creatives of the world, and that's for the tech companies of the world. It's very clear reading this book that you think creativity and innovation are important for everything from healthcare to retail, every kind of business there is.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, every business, every kind of organization, even the nonprofits of the world, they need to innovate if they want to keep up in the 21st century, right? And so if you can create a culture, an idea-friendly culture in which everyone on the team is putting ideas forward so that you can have new ideas to implement, that's really valuable.
And when you talk about an idea-friendly culture, the first thing you tackle in this book is the devil's advocate. And we've all been in those meetings, right, where somebody throws out an idea and then someone goes, let me just be devil's advocate here, and shoots the thing down.
Yes, and what a moment that is. If you think about it, there is nothing more powerful you can say in a meeting than to say, let me be devil's advocate for a moment. Because there may have been momentum building. You're about to get to yes on mm-hmm. some important decision or some proposal. And the devil's advocate just seizes power for a moment, right? And in doing so, they can shoot down some really from really interesting ideas. And so I'm not against spirited debate or critical thought. It's just that it feels like the devil's advocate's got a little too much power, mm-hmm. that they really kind of shut down the meeting as soon as they invoke that power.
And it's funny because when you say devil's advocate, it's like, I'm not criticizing your idea. I'm just saying we ought to shoot this down.
Yes, this is the pernicious part of the devil's advocate. It's like, this isn't personal. You know, this is just business. I'm just about to kill your idea.
So is there a better way to raise valid objections or concerns?
Sure. At my firm IDEO, we're trying to develop this idea we call constructive critique, right, in which it becomes okay for you to voice your concern, but you voice it in a way that is not trying to kill the idea, right? And so one way that we do that, when we do a kind of a review of either a person or an idea, is using this construction of I like, I wish, right? So the things that are going well, you say, I like that you do X, I like that you do Y, I like this part of your idea. And then you say, I wish it could be more X, right? I wish you could make it less expensive. And so it's framed as a constructive thing as opposed to, here's why it'll never work.
What's remarkable about that, Tom, is it sounds not so different from the language that we have heard from relationship counselors that we've talked to on the show. And ultimately, working in a team of any kind is about relationships.
Sure. You know, pretty much all innovation these days is done in groups, mm-hmm. in teams, right? People think in the old days that there was the lone genius, you know, Thomas Edison inventing the light bulb.
Who never was that lone.
Right. No, he had that whole team of guys in Menlo Park, New Jersey, working with him on everything. In fact, there was an interview with one of his assistants who said, yes, Edison. He says, that's a collective noun, as in Thomas Edison invented the phonograph, right? It was a team effort even then, right? We just like to characterize it as the lone genius. In fact, even then it was a group. But no doubt about it, in modern society, you need a multidisciplinary approach, which means you need multiple people involved.
So working collaboratively also requires everybody to be a little more flexible than he or she might be alone.
Sure, you just have to be a little open-minded, so to realize that you may not always be right, right? And to genuinely consider the opinions of others before you make a decision or before you go forward.
So we're going to talk about the different faces, the 10 faces of innovation, and they're organized under three categories of personas. There's learners and organizers and builders. What do each of those encompass?
Right. So first of all, very important about the roles is they're not the one true permanent role. Right. There are these, you know, Myers-Briggs tests and stuff that says, oh, this is the real you. With the roles, they're not – it's not that this is the real you. It's this is an important role that you can play for the moment. Right. And we're all actually quite good at this role swapping thing. So I have a role called husband. I have a role called brother and one called son. And then I have one called father. Right. I have a role called general manager at IDEO. Mm-hmm. So I can be in a big, you know, in a business meeting, maybe in a moment when there's a little friction happening in the meeting. But if my son calls me, I'm going to switch gears. Right. I'm going to instantly switch out of manager role and switch into father role. And in doing so, I will change my vocabulary and my patience level and my speech patterns. Like, I'm a different person. I'm in a different role, right? And everybody does this all day, right? And so it's the same with the roles. And so the learning roles, this is, you know, there are times on any project where you've got to take in new insight, right? And I actually think the learning roles are the most important of the 10 phases of innovation. So those are the learning roles. The organizational roles are mainly about collaboration, but also a bit about leadership. And then the building roles are about designing great experiences for the people around you.
What I really like about the fact that you say we're not locked into something is that anyone who's worked, particularly in a rather small company or team, there aren't always enough people so that everyone is one dedicated thing.
Oh, sure. I mean, I believe that there are at least 10 of these faces of innovation, hence the name for the book. You can't have 10 people on every team, right? Especially if you have a four-person company, right? And so people swap in and out. And so there are moments in which, you know, the anthropologist is the most valuable person on the team as you're learning. But there are also moments, you know, so if you're in the, you know, race car pit crew and you're jumping over the wall to fix that car and you've got 8 seconds – this is not a moment for anthropology. Let me think about this. No, yeah. You want all implementation. You want precision. You want speed, mm-hmm. right? And so you swap into the roles as they are appropriate, and then you swap out to other roles.
So tell us about the anthropologist. This is the first role that you describe under the learners, and anthropologists are the ones who are sort of out in the field observing.
Right. So this is by far my favorite of the 10. If I can only pick one, this is the one. And I think part of the reason that I love the anthropologist role so much is I have the faith of a convert on this one. When I joined our firm, we were all engineers. Well, mm-hmm. everybody except me was an engineer. And so the engineers were doing stuff I knew I couldn't do. Right. But when we brought in all the anthropologists, it was way back in 1991, the anthropologists would have these jobs they would do. This is like a real project. They would sit by lakes and streams and watch kids fish and then come back and tell us about it. And I said at the time, now here's a job because I think I can do this. They seem to have PhDs in something, but I'm pretty sure I can watch kids fish. Mm-hmm. Right? So I was skeptical. I was slow to embrace this anthropology stuff. But I've since flipped 180 degrees, biggest single source of innovation at IDEO. And it's partly because we still have the great problem solvers, but got to know what problem to solve. Mm-hmm. And the anthropologists are really remarkable at going out in the field, seeing things with their own eyes, not reading a report about the world, seeing the world up close and see what do humans do. And often they'll see an opportunity. They'll say, ooh, there's a customer struggling. Ooh, there's a problem we haven't solved. There's something our competitor isn't doing either. And when then they bring the problem back for the problem-solving team to work on, right? And so it's a combination of the anthropology and then the often technical problem solving.
And the anthropology, and I guess a lot of these different functions, sometimes involve re-characterizing whatever the customer's problem or need is. And in the book, there appears the quote from Henry Ford saying, well, if I had asked my customers what they needed, they would have said a faster horse.
Right. Your customers don't sit around all day thinking about your product. They may think your product is a trivial portion of their life, right? That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's just the nature of their life.
They got a lot going on.
Yeah, they got a lot going on. Right. And so you can't expect them to be futurists and say, you know what I'm going to need 5 years from now. And so we think it's even pointless to ask. Pretty much if you ask a customer, they will extrapolate from the present day. They'll say, mm-hmm. What I have currently now in my pocket or on my kitchen table, I'd like it a little smaller and a little cheaper, please, and maybe in a different color. Mm-hmm. Right. But the way you find your path to the future is not by asking them that question. They can't help you. It's by observing, watch where they stumble. Watch where they frown. Especially watch where they hurt themselves, mm-hmm. right? If you see a problem in the status quo with that, then you say, okay, how might we? And this we start most of our sentences, IDEO, with this expression, how might we? How might we create a new product, a new service, a new physical environment that addresses this human need?
Tom Kelly is my guest. He's general manager of the design firm IDEO and author of The 10 Faces of Innovation, IDEO's Strategies for Beating the Devil's Advocate and Driving Creativity Throughout Your Organization. He's in town to speak tonight at 7 at the Lamplighter School in Dallas. You can find information online at thelamplighterschool.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can ask a question at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. We will talk much more to Tom Kelly throughout this hour. But right now, we're taking a quick break. I'm joined by Jeff Whittington, who is senior producer of this show. And we are asking you, inviting you to become a supporting member of the station online at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. What a great conversation. And we're taking just a moment to make a space, really, in the conversation for you so you don't miss anything to call 888-694-6931. Or to go online and click and join at kera.org. This is a show that you listen to on a daily basis. Maybe it's appointment listening for you. Maybe KERA is your go-to station all day, every day. Well, we're asking you to think about what that's worth to you. And, you know, we're trying to wrap this membership campaign up this week. We've heard from many of you, and thank you so much if you have made a contribution. But honestly, there are enough of you listening right now. Right now to end this membership campaign. So look around, look to your left, look to your right. Which one of you is going to make the call? Which one of you is going to pick up the phone and call 888-694-6931 or make a contribution online at kera.org and help us wrap this drive up this week?
You can receive as a thank you gift a copy of Tom Kelly's book, The 10 Faces of Innovation, when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. You can do that either over the phone at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. You know, Jeff, we do not do a lot of business books on this show. Frankly, a lot of them sound very much alike. When there's one that's really different or really interesting or has been very influential, this book has really become a classic in a way that a lot of business books don't. They last for 6 weeks and they're done. But we're proud to be able to bring you discussions like this, conversations like this. The book is a wonderful thank you gift for you. You can also obtain it in a lot of other places. The important thing is that we are bringing you this conversation, and your support is what makes it possible for us to have folks like Tom Kelly in here.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the social element on our show. Last week, we talked about the built environment, about architecture and discussing and criticizing architecture. So, you know, the business environment and the environment behind what creates the atmosphere that creates the things that change our lives and that the products that we pursue and the companies that we interface with and work with, that's worthy of discussion too. I mean, there are people calling right now to talk on the show. That's what this is all about. This forum is all about. We just ask that you assign a value to it and make the decision that it's worth something more than just being a listener. We know that there are enough of you listening right now to wrap this drive up. This morning, Chris, we had about 4,000 contributions left to go to finish the campaign, and we know that there are enough of you right now that can make that happen. It is the first Tuesday of the membership campaign. We're sort of aiming toward that first Tuesday in November as well, and in honor of public radio political coverage this year, today we're throwing in a special bonus gift. It's a static cling sticker that says, I listen, I vote. And as our as one of our producers said, you can put it on the left side of your back car window or the right side of your back car
window.
You
and I would put it right in the center.
Depending on how you feel each day. That's available as an extra thank you gift with any contribution over $60 today. So pick up a copy of Tom Kelly's book with a $120 contribution, and we'll throw in the I listen, I vote static sticker.
Your support is really important. We are thrilled that you listen and that you participate in the show. We are especially grateful to those of you who take action for this radio station, because we only exist thanks to contributions by viewers just like you. The number to call is 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online to kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is general manager of the design firm IDEO, Tom Kelly. His book is called The 10 Faces of Innovation, IDEO's Strategies for Beating the Devil's Advocate and Driving Creativity Throughout Your Organization. He's in town to speak tonight at 7 at the Lamplighter School in Dallas. If you want to be part of the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Tom, the experimenter is a really interesting role because this is the person who is not afraid to kick the tires, to see how it works, and to keep trying different iterations of the same idea.
Sure. And it's really – this is pure psychology. It's like, well, how – what's my attitude going to be towards failure? Mm-hmm. And can I structure my life or my work in a way in which the failures are destigmatized? I just saw – I was at the TED conference in Long Beach, California, this really fun conclave of things. And I saw the head of DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Agency, and she talked about famous failures that they've had. They're building some Mach 20 aircraft. So that's like more than 10 times faster than the Concorde. And of course, it fails. It goes straight down in the Pacific. And they must cost a lot, those things. And somebody says to her, oh, this is so cool. You're the head of this big government agency, and still you're like encouraging failure. And she says, no, I am not. Let me be very clear about this. I am discouraging fear of failure, right? And so that's what the experimenter does, just tries to discourage fear of failure. And so you can – it's sometimes easier if you just set it up from the beginning and you say to people around you, say to your boss ideally, okay, this is an experiment. We're going to try this experiment for the next 2 weeks, right? And then we're going to see what happens. And then if it doesn't work out, it's not your failure. It's your experiment that proved that this wasn't the right way to go. You know, so Thomas Edison at one point in his life, he was – you know, we've mentioned Edison. He was trying to create the filament material for an electric light bulb. You know, and tungsten didn't just pop into his head right away. He tried 10,000 different materials. And so he said, look, I haven't failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that do not work, right? And so that's the spirit of the experimenter that says, okay, we're going to try stuff. Some of the stuff we're going to try is not going to work. We're going to try to keep everybody safe in the process. We're going to have small failures, but we are going to succeed by doing these experiments.
I'm skipping over here into the organizer functions, but I'm thinking of the person that you describe as the hurdler, and
yes.
That sort of falls really nicely with this. There are a couple people even in this organization that you know if you have a problem, that everyone says it can't be done, it can't be fixed. There are a couple people you can always present it to that say, let me take a crack at it,
right.
And they will just keep going.
Yes, and I love a hurdler, and you need these hurdlers. You know, the hurdler says basically, of course there will be obstacles on the road to innovation. They say, I love an obstacle.
Right.
This is my chance to show my stuff. Right, I visited Beijing, China, with my family a while back, and I got to stand on the track there, on the Olympic track, where the runners go, where the hurdlers go, and wow, that hurdle is pretty tall. I'm not sure I can get over one, and they go after one after another after another. But as I mentioned in the book, you take those hurdles away, they don't run any faster.
Mm-hmm.
Those hurdlers are not necessarily the fastest people in the world. They're the fastest hurdlers. Right, they have optimize their training for the obstacles. They're counting their steps. They could jump those hurdles literally blindfolded, right? And so that's what you want on your team, the kind of person who embraces the obstacle and says, okay, here we go. We're gonna find a way over this one.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now. We have Skip on the line in Dallas. Hey, Skip.
Good afternoon, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. Was exposed to IDEO through a couple of books and a session I did with the Annenberg folks in D.C., and it has to do with federal agencies, how would best be the way for federal agencies to innovate. I think that is such a huge, huge hurdle, just to use your analogy from a moment ago. How can we best innovate and solve many of the problems that are out there? Very curious about that.
Right. So this is what we're talking about is scale now. We have a whole group at IDEO called Systems at Scale. We're doing a ton of work with government agencies now. We didn't do any for the first 20 years in the history of the firm. But when you're trying to do something at scale, what we pretty much always do is boil it back down to the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
We try a little pilot program and we say, okay, how did that work? And the most skeptical people in the world, because, you know, there are in all large organizations, there are bureaucrats. There are people who are clinging to the status quo. And so they'll be skeptical and they will resist you. But you do your little experiment, and guess what? If the experiment works, suddenly they like it. In fact, this has happened to us frequently, and not just in the government work. If the experiment works, suddenly it was their idea all along, right? And so we think that's the essence of it. You cannot change a 10,000-person organization all at once. You make the little changes, and then you invite more people to the party, right, where they see what the success looked like, and then they want to be a part of it.
So oftentimes when the obstacle is bureaucracy, the issue is siloing, that people think, well, that's not my job or that's not your job, and you should go over there with your kind and I'll work with my kind. And then people really don't pollinate their ideas together. And there are really two functions here, people who bring individuals and ideas together.
Right. So you really what you're talking about is cross-pollinators,
right?
Right? People who are always – they're kind of half student, half teacher, mm-hmm. right? They're very curious. They're always reading. They're listening to NPR. They are they're taking in new insights all the time. But then – and we all know people like this. There are some people having taken in new information. They hold it tight because they think that knowledge is power and they don't want any of theirs to leak out. But a cross-pollinator is the opposite. Cross-pollinator, when they learn something new, when they hear a good news story, they're almost an unstable element until they've shared it with two or three friends or people around them. And so you need lots of people like that to kind of spread new ideas through the organization to help you evolve your culture in the way that you want it to go.
So let's talk a little bit about the organizers. After you have the organizers, we talked a little bit already about the hurdler. There are collaborators whose chief role is bringing people together.
Sure. Yeah, the collaborator is really saying, look, we've got a multidisciplinary problem, so we're going to need a multidisciplinary team to address it, right? And so they bring people in sometimes earlier than you really need them, right? Because if you know that 6 months from now you're going to be turning this over to somebody who's doing the implementation of your idea, wow, better bring them on now, mm-hmm. right? Because if you wait 6 months, it's your idea you're trying to sell them. But if you bring them in now, they were there. Even if they don't really contribute, they were there watching it all happen. They understand why, given all the constraints on your problem, this is the right solution to go for, as opposed to you wait 6 months and then you have to start from scratch trying to convince them.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting because even if it is their job, they suddenly feel like, well, why am I suddenly assigned this extra work as opposed to being excited about the project?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's actually academic research studies that show that if you show somebody your project halfway through and ask for their advice, even if you isolate the project team from their advice, so we didn't really listen to their advice, they still like the outcome better, right, because they were consulted, right? And so the cross-pollinator, it's not just about that. It's not about just about the psychology. It's genuinely incorporating multiple people's advice. But even so, if you want your idea to be carried forward, it's really helpful to use that multidisciplinary approach.
Let's go back to the phones now. Our number 1-800-933-5372. We have Diane on the line in Richardson. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I have a question about companies who have come to this idea that they do need to embrace creativity and have additional input in order to see a path to a solution. And in doing so, they invite all ideas but enforce none of them. And you sort of have this confusion where there have been ideas put forward, yet nothing's enforced. And I wonder if you could speak to that, and I'll take the answer on the air.
Thanks so much for your call. It's almost like that suggestion box that never gets opened.
Sure. So you think about companies who've come into this. So one of my favorites I worked with very closely is Procter & Gamble, mm-hmm. Cincinnati, Ohio. Right. So a part of what enabled this was new CEO at the time, a guy named A.G. Lafley. And then A.G. appointed this wonderful woman, Claudia Kotchka, to be his head of innovation. And what A.G. and Claudia did when they went to their team is they said, look, we want you to stop thinking of yourselves as problem solvers. Start thinking of yourself as solution finders. Hmm. And the team, of course, especially the technical team, is like, thinks it's all semantics. It's like, yes, boss, we'll use the new idea. But no, that's not what they meant. What turned out to be quite a big idea, which is instead of, when faced with a new challenge, instead of starting on it from scratch ourselves, we're going to get ideas from all over the world, and certainly all, at least all over the company every time, right? But it still does fall to somebody to choose, right? And so all of our projects and all the stuff that I witnessed at P&G, you diverge, right? And then you converge. You must ultimately choose among the decisions. But the problem with the suggestion box model is people feeling that their idea was never fully considered, mm-hmm. right? And so you want some systematic way where everybody feels like, okay, I didn't win this one. They didn't implement my suggestion, but my suggestion got fully considered and, you know, was equally weighted with all the other suggestions coming in. And so the best of companies are setting up systems to enable that.
This is a small thing, but I was at Target the other day thinking about all of this and solution finders. And there's a new product where, you know, people worry about what to do about expired medications and things they can't take. They pollute the land and they don't want people to get to them. And there's a new kind of packaging that you can purchase to safely dispose of these things. And it occurred to me that no consumer thought to himself or herself, this is what I need. But someone thought, okay, what can I do to solve the problem of old medications getting into the water supply?
Right. And so this gets back really to the anthropologist, which if you follow people home and you ask them questions, you observe, you say, oh, gee, that is kind of a problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And you've got these really well-intentioned people who want to do the right thing, but it's not very easy. And so this, I actually haven't seen this product, but you can see how if it solves that problem, be wonderful.
My guest is Tom Kelly. He's general manager of the design firm IDEO and author of The 10 Faces of Innovation, IDEO's Strategies for Beating the Devil's Advocate and Driving Creativity Throughout Your Organization. He's in town to speak tonight at 7 at the Lamplighter School in Dallas. Details are available online at thelamplighterschool.org. We'll talk to Tom more in a few minutes. If you'd like to join us, you can call your question in to 1-800-933-5372. You can send email to think@kera.org. During this quick break from the conversation, we want to encourage you perhaps to take advantage of our offer of a copy of The 10 Faces of Innovation as your thank you gift today. We have it available at or above the $120 contribution, which, by the way, is the average gift of people who support the station. Certainly not the only gift. We have lots of people at the Friends level of $1,500 a year, and we have plenty of people who give less than $120 a year. That's all according to your budget and according to how much you use the service. We always joke that anyone who is listening this far into the fundraising campaign really, really loves the programming. So we would suggest to you that if you are still listening, you ought to consider making a gift of support. Jeff Whittington is back now, senior producer of Think, host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. And, I would even guess that we don't even need to give you the phone number. If you've been listening this long.
You've got it memorized.
Well, we know that because of what you've told us, okay, not necessarily you, although maybe you, but people who've contributed to public radio have told us, we being public radio, okay, I listened for 5 or 10 years before I finally gave the first time. So the chances are really good that you already know the phone number, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. It's 888-694-6931. It's a toll-free number. You'll talk to a friendly person, and they will help you make your contribution. Again, it's 888-694-6931. Our task is always to convince you to go ahead and do it today. You know, I really believe that public radio listeners, by and large, want the world to be a better place. You know, at the end of the show, at the end of the day, definitely at the end of the membership campaign, okay, the world's a better place, right? And so, and that's partly the reason I think that most of us got into public broadcasting originally as listeners and then as people who work in public broadcasting because we want to help make the world a better place. Well, you can do all that. You know, you can fuel that by making an affordable gift of support right now. And you don't even have to talk to somebody. You can just go online to kera.org. You can fill out the membership form yourself, and you know, there you go.
You should know, by the way, when you do call in, Jeff and I both, I think, have been in a position where we've volunteered and been on the phone answering team. When you call 1-888-694-6931 and you're prepared to make your contribution of whatever it is, $5, $10, $20 a month, the person on the other end of the line is not going to try to push you to give more. Sometimes people are afraid to call because they think, okay, I can do $10 a month, I can do $15 a month, but I don't want to have to argue with somebody on the phone who wants me to give $50. We do not do that. We're going to say, how much do you want to contribute? Thank you so much. And let me take down your information.
Yeah, this is the extent of the sales pitch. And you can tell that
that's as good as
it's not a very good one. Okay. Because we got into this business because we weren't good at sales. All right. So, but, you know, in spite of us, people are responding, Chris.
Yeah, we sure appreciate
that. We've heard from Kathy Hewitt and Cato Mills. Hey, we heard from Sally Glass. Hello, Sally Glass, and thank you so much in Dallas for your contribution. Kenneth Jackson and Euless, Eduardo Rocio in Plano, a couple more, Barbara Lambert in Plano, Jill Powdermaker. Hello, Jill Powdermaker. I love it when I see people who I know on the list. Thank you so much,
Jill.
You
know everybody.
Marty Wilson and Richardson and Andrea Jackson in Dallas. Thanks so much to each of you. You can join these folks. Go online to KERA.org.
Thank you so much, Munira Majmundar in Irving and Renee Cuevas and Rosa Colau, perhaps, forgive me, Rosa, in Plano. Thank you, Julie Pittman in Dallas, Stephanie Johnson in Duncanville. Thank you so much, Sandra McCown in Hillsboro. We appreciate James Gardner in Dallas and Christy Armstrong in Tyler. Thanks to all of you, and thanks for your patience when I do not get your name right. It's never intentional.
Yeah, it's hard to get pronouncers because someone's writing it down for us to read. But, you know, and also in honor of the fact that it's the first Tuesday of the membership campaign, we are also offering
special
a bonus gift.
Yes.
It's a bonus thank you gift. It's one of those Static Clean stickers. So any contribution of $60 or more, no matter what you get, if you want the two reusable KERA shopping bags
or
at the $60 level, or the Think Mug at the $60 level, or if you want to pick up Tom's book, The 10 Faces of Innovation, which is very well reviewed and would make a really great read for somebody who's interested in developing things and product. I mean, I think it's a really fascinating approach. That's available at the $120 membership level. It's just $10 a month as a sustaining member, and you get the I Listen, I Vote Public Radio Static sticker. It has the KERA logo on it.
It's funny, Jeff. There are two of us on the Think team, and I was thinking we could each take five of these faces and really succeed
as
we move forward
roles.
With the show.
I play each of these roles on a weekly basis, I think.
it really is an interesting look at the way innovation works and the way it can be, all these ideas can be applied to different kinds of organizations in surprising ways. Your contribution right now not only allows you to receive a thank you copy of the book if you are interested, but it also allows you to bring you fascinating conversations with people who are at the top of their game in fields from science to politics to architecture to art to ethics. Every single day that we bring you the program, we're really proud to be able to bring this content to you. We are gratified to have a smart thinking audience, but it's only possible because people just like you who listen to the show support it with your dollars. You can make your contribution online now at KERA.org, perhaps choose a sustaining membership, which really makes it quite affordable. Or you can do this online, over the phone rather, at 1-888-694-6931. Back in just a couple of minutes with Tom Kelly.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Tom Kelly, who is general manager of the design firm IDEO and author of The 10 Faces of Innovation, IDEO's Strategies for Beating the Devil's Advocate and Driving Creativity Throughout Your Organization. He's in town to speak tonight at 7 at the Lamplighter School in Dallas. Tickets for the event are still available, and you can find out about it online at thelamplighterschool.org. Tom's website is IDEO.org, IDEO.com. IDEO. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-933-5372, and that is where we find Will on the line in Denton. Hi, Will.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, I'm learning more and more about biomimicry and design firms that are studying the solutions found in nature for product design and human solutions. And so I'm just curious if that plays into your 10 levels. I don't know if maybe there's a role, at least I hope, since I have a biology degree, for a biologist to maybe get in on, the anthropology level of, product design.
Thanks for your call.
Yep.
Sure. Yeah, we have a number of people interested in this biomimicry as an approach, basically it's a source of inspiration. And so we don't systematically build it into every project, but there's a basically a user group within IDEO that pursues this, and they try to pull out the best ideas as they can. And so there's a very popular book based on TED Talk a few years back that everybody on that team has read, and so we're looking for ways to build it into things. I think many people have heard that story about how Velcro came from a Swiss hiker who was in the hiking in the Alps and got those
nettles,
burrs
on
his socks. And so there's lots of, you think about the way nature solves ecological problems, all the kind of cleaning systems built into nature, and the fact that nature can make something as hard as a clamshell without using any heat or having any negative side effects. And so we're always scanning the horizon. So it's not a specific it's not one of the 10 faces, but it's built into the anthropologist and a bit into the experimenter as well.
So let's talk about the building faces, which are the individuals that actually put this stuff to work in the real world and often are sort of the frontline experience for customers.
Right. So my favorite of these, we call the experience architect. Mm-hmm. And we mean architect with a small a. We really mean somebody who designs experiences. And so what they do is they take a broad look at their offering, right? It's tempting to kind of fall in love with your product or your service and look at it in this kind of narrow way, the way it's described in the brochure, say. But in fact, customers buy based on their entire experience of dealing with you, right? How difficult or confusing is the purchasing process? How hard is it to put together, or how hard it is to sign up for a service? Things like that. And then there's the core offering, but then what about when I'm done, or what happens afterwards, or things like that. And so the experience architect's looking for that entire, the kind of arc of the customer journey. And if you look at all the steps in the customer journey and then you try to excel at every step, we think your customers, A, will notice, and B, will reward you for having noticed.
So this is, for example, would account for why Starbucks stores sell a lot more in their stores than when they have a little kiosk in a grocery store or something.
Right, sure. If Starbucks would be a perfect example. There's something about the store itself, the lighting, the staff, the sound of the making the coffee and things like that. It's got a nice buzz about it, and people like that feeling. That's what Starbucks calls the third place, right? It's neither home nor work. It's a place you can get away. In fact, I ran into the head of marketing for Starbucks many years ago, and he said they ask their most most valuable customers, these heavy customers, they come in at least 17 times a month.
Wow.
They go to Starbucks, and they try to distill it down. What is the number one reason that they come into Starbucks? And if you distill it down to a single word, they come in to relax. He said this is the finding. They come in to relax. He says, let me remind you, we sell a stimulant. Right. And so if you took the narrow view, you'd say, well, Starbucks, they sell hot brown liquids.
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't sell hot brown liquids. They sell relaxation. It's this place. It's this me time, because work is stressful. Home can be stressful for some people. Right. And Starbucks, or the third place, wherever your third place is, it's relaxing. And so you have to take the broad view to see that and not spend all your time thinking about the hot brown liquid.
It's also important to have people on the team who sort of tell the story of what you're trying to do, separate and apart from the experience itself.
Oh, absolutely. This is something that escaped us for, the first 20 years of IDEO, because we come from a technology background and we think, well, the work should speak for itself. No, in fact, the work is terrible at speaking for itself. People don't notice, or they don't understand, or they forget right away as soon as you start telling them something. But a story can be quite powerful. I would say everyone in your listening audience is carrying around stories in their head that they've heard even from early childhood. Right. And so what we learned, and what's embodied in the role called the storyteller, what we learned is if you have something valuable that you want to tell people about, whether it's your internal team or whether it's the outside world, wrap it in a story. And the story will carry along your idea. It will carry the message along with it. And so we now really believe in storytelling, and we feel like it is a significant part of the process of innovation.
And I guess it also allows customers to connect directly with the product. Nothing's better than a story than to make someone feel like they're invested.
Right. A story makes you feel like you're a member of a club, right? In Starbucks, when it first came out, was that way. It's like, ooh, I'm one of those Starbucks people now, because they have this great story around the history of coffee and the Starbucks experience, right? And so, the subscribing to your local NPR affiliate, right? You do it in part because of the story, that there is this tradition that's been carried on, and now I'm a part of that. right? And so people love to be members, whether it's a you know, officially with a capital M, or it's just they've joined this little group, this clan, this tribe of let's say special people, right? And the storyteller acknowledges that and invites you in. I ran into Francis Ford Coppola a few years back. We were in Argentina together, and
what a life you have!
Yeah, anyhow, I have a fun life in the speaking world. And Coppola said, you know, you work with creative people, and he said one thing I learned a long time ago is, he says, when you're working with creative people, he says, you don't tell them what to do. You invite them to the party, right? And that's what good storytelling does. It paints a picture, and then it invites you to the party.
It also speaks to this challenge that all organizations have perhaps always had, but never more than they do today in the 21st century, that you're never done innovating. You're never done evolving. The process continues. Once you've succeeded, you have to think about what comes next.
Well, in fact, once you've succeeded, watch out, because I would say the biggest single danger in a corporate setting, in an organizational setting, is complacency, mm-hmm. right? I've recently been to Tokyo, Japan to visit Sony. And Sony, if you go back far enough, you have to go back a dozen years, they are unquestionably the number one consumer electronics company in the world, right? And they just got a little too comfortable, a little too happy. They coasted a little bit. They're resting on their laurels when first Samsung and then Apple passes them by.
Yeah, it's interesting about Sony, because now they've got a long upward climb. Their quality hasn't declined, but nobody thinks of them as the go-to company.
Yeah, they didn't actually stop innovating. They just slowed their pace of innovation and let worthy competitors pass them by. And so I live right near Apple, and my brother was quite good close friends with Steve Jobs when he was alive. And Apple, there's a company that never gives up, never rests on its laurels. They are always innovating. They're always pushing. In fact, some people, where they push too fast. You know, you buy the iPhone today with the certainty that it will be out of date a year from now, that you'll just be lusting after the new one a year from now, but you're still stuck with the old model, right? And it's that significantly rapid pace of innovation that keeps Apple to be, I think, the most valuable company in the world right now.
It's occurred to me, though, just how brilliant it was that Apple first introduced, I'm sure they were both in simultaneous development, but first came the iPhone. We learned how to use it. We learned what it was. And then came the iPad, which basically was a very large iPhone, which didn't make calls.
Yep. And then they've revised that one. It's like, ooh, you got the iPad without a camera
on it. Oh, you
poor
thing.
Oh, yeah. You poor thing. Right? And so they now have a kind of a promise. They've set up a social contract that says, we're going to do new stuff. Mm-hmm. We're going to do new stuff 6 months from now that's going to make some of our old stuff look out of date. And they actually then pull the old stuff from the shelves in most cases. It's like, we don't want that old stuff around. Right. And so they just have a pace of innovation that is really the envy of their peers. Right. And I think it's a lesson that we can all take to heart, is got to keep up our personal pace of innovation and our organization's pace of innovation if we want to either get ahead or stay ahead.
Tom Kelly is general manager of IDEO and author of The 10 Faces of Innovation, IDEO's Strategies for Beating the Devil's Advocate and Driving Creativity Throughout Your Organization. He'll be speaking tonight at 7 at the Lamplighter School in Dallas. Tom, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for coming in this hour.
Sure, my pleasure.
Thanks to all of you who have called and participated in the show. Thanks especially to those of you who are supporting members, we will use that word perhaps with a capital M today, of KERA, because it is your contributions that make it possible for us to bring you programming like this, to explore a wide variety of ideas. I suppose when we were developing this show, Jeff, it was never really on the drawing board, but we could have made this a show only about one subject or another. There are lots of successful talk shows that focus on politics or on human rights or on health or on food. It's wonderful to be able to bring you a program that sort of touches on just about every aspect of modern life. It takes money to provide good programming like this. It takes the support and the understanding of an audience who demands this. We have that in you. But we also need your financial support to keep the show at a level of quality that you've come to depend on.
Absolutely. And that's why we do these membership campaigns. You know, there are several ways that KERA raises the funds necessary to function. There are some corporate underwriters who, you hear those announcements. They're not commercials, but they're very low key corporate underwriting messages. But by far, the lion's share is up to listeners, individuals who, out of, you know, just sort of their own sense of obligation and their own sense of appreciation for what they get from public radio and from KERA here in the Dallas-Fort Worth and Denton market, decide to give money to the station. And that's a really great thing. It's actually really great for you because there's no one other than you who we're trying to please. So that's why you should support this, because it's your station. It's programming crafted specifically for you, and it's very easy and affordable for you to do. The number to call, 888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org and make your contribution.
Think about this. You are a public radio listener. When you meet a new person and you realize they are a public radio listener, you recognize you will have certain things in common. You may not have the same politics. You may not live in the same neighborhood. You may not do the same thing for a living. But you know that you've met someone else who is curious about the world, who is open-minded to different ideas, who wants to understand why and how things happen instead of just sort of putting labels on everything. It's a certain kind of person that is drawn to public radio, and a great deal, a great number of you understand that that requires support. Some of you are a little slow to the party, I think, to recognize it. It feels like somebody else is going to take care of it, right? I mean, I've been there. You think, well, other people are calling in. They're eventually going to make their goal. We really do. You know, some of those people move away. Some of them, you know, are not in a position to support the station. Now is your chance to step up, to become a full member of public radio. See how great it feels. It really does. It feels surprisingly good. And I think it outweighs the value of whatever amount of dollars you give to the station.
Yeah. And you get to decide. That's the best part, is that you get to decide what it's worth. But I just hope that you'll decide that it is worth something. Because as we've been saying all day, you know, the number of people listening right now exceeds the number of contributions that the station requires to end the drive successfully. So if everyone would just call and give something, the station, this membership campaign could wrap up. And, you know, we want this to be successful. You want it to be successful. And we know that you like joining a successful effort. So that's why we're inviting you right now to call 888-694-6931 or to click and join online at kera.org. Together, we'll continue to make public radio really great right here in North Texas, and you'll play a very important and crucial and appreciated part in that.
If the conversation we had last hour with Tom Kelly made you curious about his book, The 10 Faces of Innovation, you should know we have the thank you gift copies available when you make a contribution at the $120 level. You can do this with a sustaining membership. It's 10 bucks a month. It goes automatically from your credit or your debit card, or I think we can still do it from your checking account, into the membership account. Frankly, a lot of people who do their memberships this way love them because you, in the words of Ron Popeil, you set it and forget it. You are always current. You know that your support of KERA is happening, and you can sort of relax through these fundraising campaigns and not think, oh, wait, when was the last time I made a contribution? You know you're current.
Yeah, it keeps your membership current. It also keeps KERA's basis of support solid and strong on a monthly basis. The station can then really rely on that and count on that to be there. And, you know, you can change your sustaining membership level anytime you want. As a matter of fact, if you'd like to increase your sustaining membership by, you know, say $5 or $10 a month, if you already have a sustaining membership and you you did it in the spring last year, maybe you did it in the fall, and you'd like to change it from $5 a month to $10 a month or $15 a month, well, just call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org, and you can do that. You can renew your sustaining membership and increase the level that you're giving just a little bit, you know, keep it very affordable, but it really does make a huge difference here at KERA.
You can go online to kera.org or make your contribution over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Be part of the team that makes Think possible. If you come to this show very often, maybe several times a week, maybe you never miss it, maybe every day at lunch this is a part of what you do, then your support is really valid and vital because we couldn't be here. Jeff and I would not be here. It's expensive, quite frankly. It's more expensive expensive to make a local show for the audience in this region than it would be to buy something else that comes from somewhere else. But we like that there are voices from and about and for North Texas on this program. We like being able to switch when there is a pressing local news story, as last month when the tornadoes hit and we were all very concerned. We were delighted to be able to provide the service of letting you know what was going on with the weather situation. That's the sort of flexibility we have when there is a local team in place to provide you with news and information.
You can support all that right now with your contribution at 888-694-6931 or via the web. Go to KERA.org, click on the support page, and make your contribution there.
Your support is vital, and we really appreciate it. Just test Jeff or me if you happen to meet us out on the street somewhere. Let us know you're a member, and I guarantee we will say thank you and give you a very sincere smile. We mean it. We really mean it. Every dollar that you donate makes our jobs possible and makes your radio experience easier and ultimately makes the fundraising campaigns shorter. Please get online now to make your contribution at KERA.org or call in to 1-888-694-6931. Choose a copy of The 10 Faces of Innovation if you like. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.